Welcome to another edition of the West Virginia Soccer Association Beyond the Pitch podcast. My name is Marcus Cole. On the phone with us today is Dr. Heather Klodges, Associate Professor, Department of Pediatrics, Pediatric Pulmonology, and Sleep Medicine at West Virginia University. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, over the last few weeks, our podcasts have been focusing on what I like to call controlling the controllables. There are so many things that are outside of an athlete's control: coaching decisions, playing conditions, injuries, things along that lines. They can't be controlled by the athlete, but there are so many things that an athlete can control, ranging from nutrition, hydration, sleep, things for injury prevention, things along that lines. And I think one thing that is so missed by athletes, parents, and coaches, and this is the reason why we have you on the show today, is sleep and getting a proper amount of sleep and the sleep needs of a young athlete. So if you would just give us a little bit of background about you and your qualifications.
Okay. I did all of my training at WVU, so medical school. I'm also board certified in pediatrics and internal medicine, and then got my sleep certification in 2009. So I've been practicing sleep medicine exclusively for the past 10 years. I see both adults and pediatric patients at WVU, and I also have a couple of sleep labs closer to where I live, which is in Lewisburg, West Virginia.
Awesome. Now, tell us a little bit, explain the importance of sleep to a young athlete.
So first, I'm going to touch on a couple facts about sleep. And we know sleep is important and actually necessary for life. So there have been some studies to show that in extreme sleep deprivation situations, it can lead to death. So first of all, sleep is necessary for life. It occurs across all species that have been studied. We know that it's important for metabolism. A lot of hormones are produced only in sleep and then exclusively in certain stages or types of sleep. It's important for immune function, for learning, memory, focus, concentration. Sleep is unique in that we have different stages or types of sleep, and in each type of sleep are important for different functions, such as immune function or metabolism, memory.
And obviously, athletes that get a proper amount of sleep and are going through these processes, the one thing that you mentioned that really stood out there was decision-making, because obviously soccer is such a free-flowing sport. It's, you know, it's not like football where you get a few seconds of downtime to regroup, get a new play, and execute that play. It's a constant free flow of decision-making. What do I need to do next? That type of thing. Oh, man, I missed that shot. I got to refocus, things along that lines. And obviously, you can't properly do that without proper amount of sleep.
Correct. There's actually been a lot of research coming out of Stanford. They have a sleep physiology lab that looks at athletic performance and sleep duration, and they touch on everything that you've just commented on. So, for example, let's say the executive part, you know, the memory, focus, concentration, understanding a play, where you're supposed to be in space and in the field, and that would be more of your REM or dream sleep that is responsible for that. Let's say that it's growth hormone production. So we know that probably one of the most sought after performance enhancing drugs right now is growth hormone or human growth hormone. We produce our own growth hormone, and it's produced only in slow wave sleep, which is in the first 3 hours of sleep. there's been a lot of studies that show that if you go to bed later than you should physiologically, or if you don't get the proper amount of nighttime sleep, we have decreased growth hormone production. And so we know growth hormone is not only important for growth and development, but also for muscle repair, bone strength, you know, all types of athletic recovery. So, you know, those two aspects. And then let's move to reaction time. Reaction time is really important in soccer as well. And there's a lot of studies that show that total nighttime sleep deprivation has a direct consequence on reaction times and ability to think quickly on your feet.
How important is a sleep routine in getting the proper amount of sleep?
That's where we start, you know. And so if people have trouble, there's a couple of different ways to look at sleep difficulties or insufficient sleep. So I think the first barrier to overcome is understanding the importance of sleep. If you don't value sleep and understand how important it is, you're not going to consider it a priority. So I talk to the kids that I see in clinic and the parents that I see in clinic that we have to value this. We have to set it time and a sufficient amount of time. So that's the first hurdle. The second hurdle is what if you allow yourself enough time, but you can't fall asleep? And so that puts you into more of a sleep disorder. Now, we know that that happens a lot to our athletic or any of our adolescent kids because they physiologically have a delayed sleep phase. So we have a clock in our brain that tells us when it's time to fall asleep and when it's time to wake up. You know, in general, the clock functions between 8 to 10 p.m. for adults and wake up time around 7 to 8 a.m. But in an adolescent, it gets shifted or delayed, and it's more like midnight is their physiologic time to go to sleep, and noon would be their physiologic time to wake up. So the challenges that we face in our society where we have early high school start times is that kids are required to fall asleep sooner than when their clock tells them to. So I have some kids that have an exaggerated delayed sleep phase syndrome. I have some kids that have some difficulties, but we can overcome that. And lastly, which is the big one in society today, is electronics. So we know electronics produce blue wave light, and blue wave light promotes wakefulness. And so anyone that sits on an electronic device is actually delaying their normal time to sleep anyway.
Now, you hit on so many things just in that explanation that I want to dive into a little bit deeper. I know you mentioned about the later times that an adolescent would go to sleep and wake up. And I think that there's a perception out there, and I have two athletes in my family. I have a son who's a freshman in college and he swims for the WVU Tech swim team. I have a daughter who's a high school senior this year, going to go on to play college soccer. And, you know, we talk about sleep all the time and making sure that you set a priority to make sleep a priority in your life, just as you would eating and hydrating and foam rolling and things along the lines that, you know, because you're a performing athlete. And I think sometimes it may be a person's perception, maybe a parent perception, about adolescents and needing a little bit more sleep than the average human being. And then when the kids sleep in and things along that lines, there's a stigma to it a little bit of laziness.
Yes. So actually, aside from the infant time period, adolescents require more sleep than any other time period in life. And we know that nationally, our adolescents are sleep deprived. We're not allowing them to get enough sleep. Nationally, the average is around 7.5 hours. Goal sleep for the adolescent is 9 hours a night. Lots of studies have shown that not only does this affect academic performance, there's an amazing study that I have, and maybe I can find it here real quick because it's a pretty impressive study. They looked at sleep duration in academics, and they studied 3,000 children between 9th to 12th grade and did survey questions, and they asked, how long do you sleep? What time do you go to bed? What time do you wake up? Do you get A's and B's or C's and D's? And statistically significant difference between the A's and B's and C's and D's by 45 minutes of nighttime sleep. And that factors in for every other confounding factor that could be there. So just grades alone are dependent on how much nighttime sleep you get. And then they did another study where they looked at 27,000 students from Fairfax, Virginia, and looked at sleep deprivation and mood. Most particularly, are you happy? Do you have suicidal thoughts, or have you ever attempted suicide? And studies show between 8 to 9 hours of sleep is the lowest incidence, and then the highest peaks at 4 hours of sleep. And so not only does sleep deprivation affect academics, it affects mood, motor skills, ability to think and concentrate. So every aspect, just like you said, I like to tell people, we think about an athlete's performance as nutrition, exercise, training, performance. There's all these modalities that I could name, but sleep, I think, should be part of the triangle, but part of the corner of one of the triangle. So important.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. Another thing that you mentioned about start times for schools, and I know this is something that we can't control a whole lot as a parent. I know here in our area in the Kanawha Valley, they moved high school start times to 8:30 from 7:30 based upon information.
Right.
And I think that's worked out rather well. I mean, I can only speak for my daughter, but I know that she's getting some pretty decent amount of sleep and quality sleep, too, at the same time.
I'll just touch on that real quick. The state of California passed a law last year about start times at 8:30. The governor vetoed it for other reasons, but it's up again this year. So there's a lot of data out there to show that increased performance across the board on academics, athletics, mood, firearms in school, even violence in school are dependent on the hours of sleep kids get, and school start times can affect that. And 8:30 is what's recommended. The challenge with West Virginia is every county gets to decide school start time. So if West Virginia was to tackle this, you would have to do it county by county, which is extremely challenging. So if families come to me with a problem, or teachers or professors or other physicians, and I give them the information, there's a great resource called Start School Later, and it has all this data that I'm talking about, and that if you can fight this individually in your county, that's the best place to start. And just like you said, your county, our start times are 8:10, so not terrible here in Greenbrier County.
Now, another thing that you mentioned during your explanation earlier was talking about the blue wave light from cell phones and tablets and TV and things along that lines. I see it, kids will check social media one last time. They'll go on Instagram and see what's going on and check Twitter and just delve into that a little bit more of problems when we do that.
So I think it's twofold. First of all, we know, and the literature shows that blue light actually gives feedback to your eyes and tells it the brain that it's daytime. And essentially, you're restarting your circadian rhythm. So from that standpoint, we're messing up our clock. The second standpoint is you're doing something that's mentally stimulating, especially kids. They look at, something that's happening, if it's something that is upsetting or something that's interesting, then it stimulates the brain when really we need to be unwinding. So I'm pretty mean in my household. I have 4 kids myself, 2 teenagers, and we have a curfew, and I pretty much tell them we need to turn off the electronic devices, put them on silent, and don't check them, after a certain time. There has been some studies show that if you have blue light apps, so they make apps that screen out blue light, that actually is very effective in counteracting that part of the delayed rhythm. And so essentially, people that look at electronic devices, the blue light can delay sleep time by approximately 45 minutes, which what is interesting is that's the difference between the A's and B's and C's and D's kids that I told you about. So if we can at least try to do blue light apps, but I also try to convince kids to pick a time to unwind, turn off the electronics, and just rest the brain in preparation and going back to that routine for sleep.
What would you recommend to a youth athlete of a pre-bed routine that would benefit their sleep patterns and sleep habits?
You know, everyone's different on how they like to relax. So I try not to exactly come up with a formula for everyone. You know, for example, my two boys shower every night before they go to bed. Probably a good idea considering everything they get into through the day. But for some people, baths are or showers are stimulating, are, you know, wake promoting. I have some kids, particularly younger kids, that we can't bathe in the evening because that is what causes them not to be able to go to sleep at night. So you have to look at the individual child. But I would say, you know, a routine that includes, you know, I love dinner with the family every night. That's a rule in our house. I don't care if it's at 9 p.m. at night when we're eating. That's when it happens. You know, 8 or 9, and then a shower, and then a quiet activity. We kind of gather in the living room and just chat about our day and what we have tomorrow and make a plan of who's going where and who's riding, getting school books together, make sure if there's any lunches or snacks that need packed, and kind of just make a plan for the day. And my teenage boys do that too. I mean, they're down there doing the same thing, and then everyone goes to bed. My boys like to listen to music for a little bit. I think music is great. It doesn't have the light. It doesn't have the mental thinking that your electronic device has. It's a good way to unwind.
Now, I know when I sleep, there are certain conditions I have to have for me to be able to sleep well. I need a cool room. I like it cold. I'd rather be cold than be hot. I need a white noise sound going on. Otherwise, I cannot sleep. Talk to us a little bit about creating a good sleeping environment.
So first and foremost, no TV. So studies have also shown that if you have a TV in your room, you're about 45 minutes to an hour less sleep than everybody else that does not have one. So no TV or electronics in the bedroom. This was a challenge for my boys because they use their phone as their alarm. We use our phone for so many things. So we solved that by putting an Alexa in the room that wakes them up with their music or talking to them in the morning so that they can silence their phone. White noise is excellent. Some people just need to drown out any of the surrounding noise that's present. A lot of patients like fans. Keeping the room at a cooler temperature does help because actually our body hits a temperature minimum in the middle of the night. It's required for good, healthy sleep. And we know that insomnia or people that have trouble sleeping, studies have shown that they have some skin temperature inconsistencies or an inability to hit that temperature low appropriately. And so sometimes my patients that tend towards insomnia or trouble sleeping really benefit from a cooler temperature in the room and a fan on them.
Yeah, the white noise seems to help me dramatically just from a sense of if, you know, sometimes my nose whistles and that'll wake me up out of a sleep, you know, just out of nowhere, right. It'll just happen. Right. And I'll be like, oh my goodness. But you know, I don't hear certain things along that lines when I have the white noise going. And I know, I have an actual app on my phone. If I can't bring a fan with me to wherever I'm going, I have that white noise app on my phone that I play. You know, that certainly helps out a lot.
Right.
Now, talk to me just a little bit. What are some things that an athlete should consider if they are having some issues getting the proper amount of sleep? What are some, I don't want to say easy fixes, but what things can they look into that might make a difference quicker?
So, you know, these are the steps that I go through. One is, are you allowing yourself enough time to sleep? Are you making it a priority? Number two is, if you're allowing yourself enough time, are you able to sleep within that time? And so it would be defined as insomnia if you feel like you're having trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, and it's considered a problem for you. And so the first thing that I would do is review sleep hygiene, like we talked about, making sure your bedroom's conducive to sleep, getting rid of the electronics. Another thing I wanted to touch on real quick was caffeine. Caffeine has an extremely long half-life. And so half-life means how long does it take for one half of the drug ingredient to be gone. So caffeine's half-life is between 6 to 8 hours. So essentially the coffee that you drink in the morning is still halfway there 8 hours later. And the problem is a lot of these youth are using pre-workout drinks. So if you look at any of these pre-workout or Monsters or any of these types of beverages, they have an extremely high amount of caffeine, much higher than a coffee would. A coffee, standard coffee has 75 milligrams, a Starbucks tall, 150 milligrams. One scoop of pre-workout is 200 milligrams. Wow. And sometimes these athletes are taking this right before practice, and practice is after school. Caffeine, some people will tell you, oh, caffeine doesn't bother me, I can still fall asleep. Yeah, you might be able to sleep, but you're not getting the right quality sleep. And I told you earlier in this podcast how important stages of sleep are. It's very important to have the right type of sleep. It has to be at the right time of night, even to get any hormone production. And so you're interfering with the types of sleep that you're getting. So caffeine is huge. And I try to counsel people and look at, when are we doing caffeine? You don't need a pre-workout drink if you're getting adequate sleep. And so it kind of is a snowball effect. And then lastly, let's say that you're sleeping all night. Let's say you're sleeping 8 to 9 hours a night, but you're still tired the next day and you don't have enough energy. Well, then that's a sign that there could be an underlying sleep disorder. So then we look at some of the other sleep disorders. If there's any snoring, we need to look at obstructive sleep apnea. This does occur in children as well, and is very treatable. Restless leg syndrome can occur in children and adolescents. So that's an uncomfortable sensation in the legs that makes it difficult to fall asleep. Some of those children have periodic leg movements, so they're kicking all through the night in their sleep, and that can be shown to fragment types of sleep, or then you don't get the right quality of sleep. So lots of other different sleep disorders that we can screen for and figure out.
Now, Doctor, before we wrap up the podcast here, would you be able to provide us some information on if folks are looking for more information about sleep disorders and how to improve their child's sleep patterns and things along that lines, whether it's a good resource that you go to, or how they can contact you, things along that lines?
So the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, that's my boarding academy as far as medicine goes. They have a great patient resource. There's also the Sleep Research Society. That's also pretty good. But if you type in American Academy of Sleep Medicine, anything around that Google search will give you some good resources, patient information. At WVU, if you live in the vicinity of WVU, the sleep lab there, it can be found on the website, but that phone number is 304-598-4835. And again, that is how you could get in touch with or figure out if there's a sleep provider in your area. There are some adult sleep doctors in West Virginia that will see adolescents, but really there's only a sleep doctor at CAMC that's pediatric boarded. I think there's one at Huntington that works part-time, and then me at WVU. So not too many pediatric sleep doctors in the state.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate the information. Provided a lot of value to our listeners here today on the podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.